Satan, hear my plea. Go tell God he don't need me. It's time I gave the devil the respect that he deserved. Down below, in his fiery hole. I can't keep a job with a gun. I can't feed my only son. From all the things that I have done, with my life to lose my worthless soul. I tried to silence all the lies. There's nothing that I didn't try to make God hush until I ease my head. It's gotten easy since I quit, but I was born right. Then any day, next thing you know, I see stars in someone else's bed. Around that time, I told myself this year was born to smile. My stars are all I have. I don't need a soul. Yeah.
surprise. I am lazy. Notation writes when you're full, but my papers they depend on tape. I stuck them to the wall. Yes, the papers depend on tape, so they do not fall. They do not fall.
Listening to Revolution Rock here on CJM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area, syndicating across several different stations throughout Canada. I'm your host, Dave Constantino, joined with Adam Pelche, and we're doing a show highlighting the career of Steve Albini, recording engineer and innovative noise rock musician.
Mm-hmm. He was someone that really changed the game for what underground and alternative rock could be considered in many ways. And people always, of course, associate him very tightly with very aggressive alternative rock. And yet he had such a broad range of musical styles he worked with in terms of recording and engineering other groups. It's actually very sobering just to realize the breadth of artists he worked with, including Ty Segall on that one record, his self-titled from 2017.
Yeah.
I love this record so much, and I actually didn't realize up until doing research for this episode that he produced this one and recorded Ty for it. And he has this great way of capturing a drum sound, having it captured perfectly in the room. You really feel like you're right next to the drum kit. There's no effects, no echo really that's discernible. It sounds so tight and so organic. And that's something that resonates really well in that song we just heard, Papers.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this album is the first part of the record, and the second song is like 10 minutes. It's more Ty Segall's like electric, rock, heavy rock sound. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of more acoustic-y type songs to end it out. It's a really unique record. And there's a famous video online of Steve Albini and Ty Segall smashing a toilet. And it's even in one of the songs.
I think it is a great encapsulation of both artist ethos.
It's a representation of what?
Of the destruction of things to be used in a way that they were not intended to be. Let's put it that way. Either way, fantastic stuff there from Ty Segall. Another artist he worked with, which was a bit surprising, was Jarvis Cocker from the band Pulp. And Pulp were known for having these sort of lavish Britpop numbers. And Jarvis Cocker, after disbanding the group, came in with this solo record called Further Complications. And it was incredible because it was... Yeah, it had some more theatrical moments, but it also had some very straight-ahead rock moments with very fuzzed-out guitars, as we heard in this number, Angela.
Yeah, and then before that, we heard music from the John Spencer Blues Explosion. From their first self-titled release, came out in 1992, we heard the song The Feeling of Love. Now, what's interesting about the first three John Spencer Blues Explosion albums is a very large chunk of material, and then they just put out three albums. Now, a lot of this material was recorded with Steve Albini and then also a different recording engineer, and then they kind of combined them and then made these three albums. But this first one, this was one song that Albini did produce, one of several. And this is early John Spencer Blues Explosion. Obviously, you can hear the whole blues kind of... I don't know how to explain.
To me, at this point, it's very reminiscent of a band like Gun Club, but more pared down.
Yeah.
But no, you really see where they're going to be heading, more psyched out, more scuzzy sounding guitars eventually. But this early encapsulation of the group, I think, really shows it in that great embryonic state. You know, it was interesting you mentioned how this was kind of a mixture of different artists recording John Spencer, because it's similar to what we had on the album we heard right before that from Sadies, from Pure Diamond Gold, which featured two recording engineers, and one of them was Albini. You can look at the track listings to determine who recorded what song, but we played one that Albini recorded with the Sadies. I tried not to.
And he did record the majority of the songs that would make up Pure Diamond Gold.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they reissued it on CD, they put some extra songs from an EP they had and from things around that session. Prior to that, we heard another song by the Sadies. This one, Albini produced entirely. 1996 album, Precious Moments. And this is their very first album. It's not a strange album. It's just there's a lot of instrumental songs on it. Not that that's a problem.
You can really tell that they were a band in motion, that they were really just discovering who they were and what they were going to end up doing. It is a great early look at what the band would end up being, and you hear a lot of directions they're going to be heading in eventually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a very early look at Sadies. The track we heard from that was Clear a Path. And that also coincided with what we heard before, which was kind of a proto-Sadies group,
mm-hmm.
featuring members that eventually would go into that band, with the group Phonocomb.
Yeah, this featured members of Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet when they split up, and then Dallas Good on guitar of the Sadies. And they put out one album, and I believe maybe one or two singles, and that was it. They were around very short-lived. Because the Sadies kind of took off, and then Don Pyle was on to other things. We heard Burnt Down with Feedback, one of the longer ones found on 1996's Fresh Gasoline. Now, did I say 1996 for the first Sadies album?
I think you did, and that was actually 1998.
Yeah, that was an error on my part. I apologize. And then we started off with a song from an album we actually played in its entirety last year to celebrate its 30th anniversary,
mm-hmm.
Sport Fishin'. The third album by Shadowy Men on Shadowy Planet, it's called Sport Fishin', The Lure of the Bait, The Luck of the Hook. Now, this is an album that they recorded with Albini. He was a big fan of the band,
mm-hmm.
and we talked with Don Pyle last year about this album and the sessions, and he talked quite a bit about the process recording with Steve Albini, because sometimes he's very specific about certain things, and he just kind of let them do their thing.
And he cleared up a lot of the mythology surrounding the recording sessions too. You can always go to revrock.blogspot.com and you can check out the full interview and more information about what was talked about there. We should just quickly mention we heard Spy School Graduation Theme from that release. But yeah, I think that interview highlighted something that I heard so much throughout the recording sessions that I have been reading about with Steve Albini from various artists, which was that he had a clear vision of what they wanted, and that vision was simply to let the artists be who they were. So Steve Albini would record live off the floor. He would hardly put any embellishments, any effects on anything. He wanted the raw sound of the artist, and he would do whatever he could to extrapolate that without necessarily covering it up with effects. So one of the bands I think he really broke out with and we're going to be playing next was a great example of this with Pixies. Pixies, he mic'd the drums in such a way you really just sounded like you were within a room with the drum. I've barely heard as good a drum sound on any other record as this one. It just sounds so tight. It just sounds very unfiltered, especially compared to the compressed and echoey drums you've heard so many hyper-saturated 1980s recordings just
right.
ad nauseum. This was such a break from it. And also getting musicians to play with steel picks for their guitars was a huge thing. Joey Santiago said like it really changed the game for him, along with Black Francis, the two guitars for the group. They said it really changed what the sound was for the group, and going forward, that sound I think, always hung over the band. They could never quite replicate it, even on other great records that they would make. And they did make incredible records. I don't think anything quite touched the heights of Surfer Rosa from 1988. So we're going to be starting off the next set with that. Before we do, though, there are some great quotes from Steve Albini. I'm just wondering if Dave might be able to share one with us before we get into the set.
I rarely do this, but I actually got some stuff to talk about on air. I don't like to have notes. I like to just...
Or to be prepared.
I just like to use my brain notes, which sometimes are fuzzy. But in this case, I'm going to read... I'll read two quotes, okay? And then we'll get to PSA and then some music from the Pixies. In regards to recording, there's a very famous letter that he wrote to Nirvana just before they did In Utero, and it was a 4-page letter basically outlining how he does things and if they're okay with this. You can find it online, and it was in one of Nirvana's reissues of In Utero several years back, but he said this, "I think paying a royalty to a producer or engineer is ethically infeasible. The band write the songs, the band play the music, it's the band's fans who buy the records. The band is responsible for whether it's a great record or a horrible record. Royalties belong to the band." A lot of producers, especially during this time period, would take what they call points, and they would get a percentage of the overall sales that albums would make. And in this case, with Nirvana, he said, assume we sell 3 million records, which it probably did. I'm not sure the exact numbers. That works out to $400,000 or so. And he said, there's no effing way I would ever be able to take that much money. I wouldn't be able to sleep. I wouldn't feel right. And he also went on to say, I would like to be paid like a plumber. I do the job and you pay me for what it's worth in that moment. That's kind of his ethos. He didn't want to take anything away from the band that they should rightfully have on their own. And is very outspoken about this throughout his career.
Mm-hmm. Now, he would be very contrarian, and he would say some very dismissive things about a lot of the groups he recorded
with.
That's
another thing.
And we'll talk about that when we come back. But he's gone back on a lot of his statements, and he's acknowledged the fact that he was very harsh and he was being a contrarian. But we'll talk about that kind of coming to terms with his past as we delve back from this last set. Here we are starting with music from Pixies, getting to music from Breeders, Jesus Lizard, and more, just starting off with a quick station ID and PSA.
For you.